How many emails are too many per week or per day, et cetera? What's your opinion on that?
That, again, depends on your market. As long as you're talking about their problems and you're in their world, you cannot go wrong. You cannot bore someone who's got, for example, a urinary tract infection. There's nothing that you can say to that guy about urinary tract infections and different ways of curing urinary tract infections that they're not going to be glued to wanting to hear more about. Even if you sent them like 12 emails a day, if somebody's really suffering from something, you can't talk to them enough. But if you're just talking to a general audience of something and they're not really that hot of prospects, or, you know, maybe they're just not as hot of a market for whatever reason, you know, you might not want to overload them with too many emails. You really kind of got to gauge it. You know, what's profitable and what's not? If sending that second or third email out is getting you sales and it's worth it for you to do it, then I see no reason not to do it. Maybe there's a limit, maybe there's not, but that's always going to be determined by each individual situation.
When I first started to receive your emails, I felt they were too many too often. However, my view has changed slightly. I believe it's important to stay connected and therefore not forgotten, and I guess that's one of the secrets. However, I'm also aware that in Australia, we market differently. Routinely, I launch my second business. I sold the first one 6 years ago, and much has changed, particularly with social media and the use of the internet. My target market is predominantly married female parents, approximately 86%, between the ages of 27 years up to baby boomers. In my first email newsletter sent out in October 2010, I included several call to actions, which included a year of home-delivered flowers, and I didn't receive one response. As a new portrait photography business in Sydney, Australia, how am I able to get my readers to target market to respond to my newsletter and my email marketing approach?
I'd have to see the guy's emails. I'd have to see more about his market. I don't know a whole lot about that market personally, and maybe they just don't want what he's selling. A lot of times people get into business because they want to sell something instead of finding a problem to solve. I'm not saying that is necessarily the case with this guy, because I know of at least one person who's in his business, not in Australia, but in America, who does extremely well sending direct mail letters with just a simple offer. You know, there's just no way I can answer that because I don't know enough about his market, or his emails may have totally sucked for all I know. I mean, they may have turned off these people. We just don't know. Maybe the market in Australia is just different than the one I've seen in the United States. There's so many ways to look at this, but without more information, I just can't answer.
Yeah. How did he acquire the emails? Where did they come from? How did he get them on the list? What was the offer? What did he tell them? There are too many variables. I agree. How do you walk the fine line between being a persistent marketer and an annoying pest?
This is a good question. I think this goes back to that Dan Kennedy story. Remember that one where his house was on fire and he didn't know it, and he's on the phone and he's ignoring this guy who's banging on his door trying to get his attention, and he just thinks it's an annoying pest until he notices the house is on fire and the guy's trying to help him. And he went from being an annoying pest to a welcome guest. I think that's like the best story you can ever study for this, because you have to be the answer to their problems. As long as you're the answer to their problems and you're in their world, talking about their pains and their hopes and their desires and what they're going through in their lives, you're not going to be an annoying pest. You're going to be a welcome guest. But if you just go out there guns blazing with another sales pitch day after day after day, or more of the same old thing they're getting from everyone else, you do run the risk of being an annoying pest. So you have to really sit down with your knowledge of your market and say, what do these guys want? And then, how can I give it to them? And just do that, and you won't be a pest. It's impossible to be a pest to someone if you have the solution to a problem that's really bothering them.
That's excellent, yep. Ben, have you found a certain day of the week where your open clicks and conversions are higher?
This is a very good question. Every time I think something is a certain way, I find out it's not. I've been told never do a sale that lasts longer than a few days or 4 days. Yet I've done sales that last 7 days or 2 weeks. And generally speaking, I don't know if there's a better day or not to sell on, but let's say that I had done a bunch of testing in this, and I have done some testing in this actually, but let's say that I was like the expert at this and I did this all the time. My test results would still be irrelevant to you because my market is going to be different. The way I market to my market's going to be different. They're already hearing from me every single day, that sort of thing. You know, a lot of times people will say nobody buys on Mondays. I get a lot of sales on Mondays. Really? You know, what are you selling? If you're selling, for example, how to make money stuff, Mondays might actually be a good day, because what happens Monday morning? They're sick of their job. They're dreading the week. And, oh, here's an offer for me to get out of this job, you know, on my own. I mean, that might be the best message they can hear. But you might be selling something that won't appeal to them until another day of the week. or not have as much appeal, and it won't matter either way. So this all comes down to your unique market, and if you're going to test it, test it. I mean, that's really the only way to find out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've done about 15 or 16 of these promotions, you know, where I sell the $20 products. And probably on 90% of them, I did them on the weekends and on holidays. I had great results with them. I mean, I would do them on a Friday afternoon or just all Saturday and Sunday. And those are times when you think most people aren't kind of really in front of their computer. They're doing stuff on the weekend or they're not really checking their email. But that's proven wrong. And I've done well with these on weekends and even on Thanksgiving. You did the Eugene Short. You were doing it on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
Well, you know what? My original email launch, maybe it was the second one or whatever I did last July, it was a week-long launch, which everyone said, don't do that. You should do it in like 3 days or something. I said, screw them. I did it over 1 week, and it ended on July 4th, you know, Independence Day here in America. And most of my sales came the first day and then the last 2 days, including on Independence Day when everyone's supposedly out barbecuing and ignoring their emails. And during the week, I actually got less sales. So, you know, you can't believe what everybody says. Whenever somebody says there's a rule to something, that rule is going to be proven wrong. So I'm a big fan of doing these holidays, and I actually did this watching you do this. Other than, like, Black Friday, where everybody does the same lame Black Friday sale, most holidays are devoid of sales. Why not go after people when nobody else is?
Right. I mean, the stores are closed. People are just brainwashed to thinking that no business is happening on these holidays, except maybe the grocery store.
And with Black Friday, which I'm starting to think, you know, it's not a bad weekend to do a sale, but why not do a pre-Black Friday sale? You do it the week before and preempt everybody else. You can think around this stuff, too, you know. There's no real rule to any of this.
All right. How about, do you see a spike in your unsubscribes on days when you send out multiple promotional emails in one day?
I'll answer that in a second, but I'm kind of concerned by everybody's worrying about unsubscribes. It's like every other question is like, they're worried about unsubscribes. Why are they worried about people who don't want to hear from them? You should be happy when somebody unsubscribes. They're just not as into the topic as someone who's going to buy it. Again, you and I sell similar products. Let's say I've got people on my autoresponder, but they're really not entrepreneurs. They're just kind of out there. They're looking around. Yeah, they're not really going to do anything, and they know they're not going to do anything. You know, and he unsubscribes. That's a good thing. I mean, I don't want to be bothering this guy if he's not into it. If he doesn't have the problem I'm trying to solve, and that's all that's happening when somebody unsubscribes. They don't see you as the solution to their problem. That could not have nothing to do with you whatsoever. So don't worry about the unsubscribe. But as for seeing a spike, no, I haven't, actually. And that's kind of surprised me more than anybody. If you're doing this the right way, and if you're segmenting your list correctly, you'll probably have less unsubscribes from your segmented list than you will from your main list anyway. So I don't think you'll get too many if you do it the right way.
I will say this. On some of my promotions, I have looked at the unsubscribe. If I do, you know, a promotion where I'm going to promote and do 5 emails in one day, one of my countdown emails, like 7 hours left, 5 hours left, 3 hours left, 2 hours, 20 minutes, I do see an increase in unsubscribes. I mean, people just plain aren't used to seeing 5 emails in 5 or 6 hours. It's so out of the ordinary, and especially from a marketer, that it kind of shocks them. And I have to admit, you are going to lose some people. But at the same time, I'm going to gain sales as well. So you got to ask yourself, and it's kind of a hard question to ask, and especially with a lot of the questions here of people worried about unsubscribes. I mean, I don't want people to unsubscribe, but I also understand what my mission and purpose is, and it's to generate an income and to promote and sell products so I can continue on with my business. So you got to take the good with the bad. You can't have it both ways. You can't promote hard and generate sales and not have some unsubscribe. You're not going to make everyone happy. Some people are going to get irritated, and they're going to unsubscribe, and you may not see them again ever. But at the same time, if you want to please all those people, then don't do anything. And if you don't do anything, you're not going to get any sales. So you've got to decide what's important.
Michael, what equipment do you recommend for high-quality recording?
I have to admit, I've had people on my list tell me how bad my recordings are. I think my recordings are just good enough, but I'm using the same silly little piece of equipment that I've been using for probably 8 years, and it's a Sony ICD-ST10, T as in Tom, 10, digital recorder. Sony ICD-ST10 digital recorder. It's a little digital recorder. Ben, I think you've got an Olympus or something from Radio Shack.
I had an Olympus. Now I use a Sony ICD-UX70, and it's Great.
All right, so they're a little recorder, and you're going to go to Radio Shack or go online, radioshack.com, type in record phone calls. There's this little black thing that plugs into the back of your phone, and it's got a jack that plugs into your recorder, and it just integrates where it allows you to record digitally. So there's other high-tech stuff you can find, more expensive equipment, but I just don't use it. I use this, and I feel like it's good enough. It's not like broadcast quality sound, but it's good enough because you got to keep in mind your file on the internet, you don't want such a humongous file that people can't download it and they can't pass it around. So all the files are saved at a level that's manageable to upload and to offer people to download. So you're going to reduce quality anyway, but that's what I use. For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Do you offer complete interviews for free, or do you save some stuff to offer on a premium version, and is this a standard practice on your part?
It is a standard practice. I do offer a ton of interviews completely for free, but as I build my collection of interviews, I'm packaging them and I'm creating information products from them. So if I do, let's say, 10 interviews related to joint ventures, I may take five of the best ones, and I'll package those, take those off my site where you can't get them for free, and then turn that into a product that I can sell. So yeah, as I'm building my collection, I'm packaging and creating packages from those interviews, and those collection of those package interviews is what makes up probably 80% of the products that I sell online.
What software or vendors do you use to record the interviews?
I just use my little Sony ICD recorder, like I explained in the previous question. The only software you'll need is when you buy your digital recorder, there is some software that allows you to extract the audio recording that you recorded and get it onto your computer. I do take that back. There's some editing recording, but that's not for doing the recording. So the software comes with your digital recorder that allows you to take it off your recorder and to get it onto your computer. Now, the software for editing is a different story.
Does announcing before the sign-up page that you are offering a downloadable transcript of the auto recording to the subscribers after the interview increase your opt-in rates?
I don't really have like a squeeze page where I'm forcing people to, in most cases I don't, where I'm forcing people to opt in, and I'm not really using the transcript as a bribe to get them to. I have done it in the past, and I would say letting them know exactly what's waiting for them on the other side, if they give me their name and email address, would increase the subscribe rate if you let them know what they're going to get by putting in their email address and name. So I think it would be a smart thing to do if you want to set up a squeeze page that way.
Michael, if I were to start recording my own audio interviews, there is obviously a difference between perceived value of my product compared to someone such as yourself. What would you do if the roles reversed, and knowing what you know now, to launch these products and create a buzz that leads to massive edification and perceived value relatively quickly?
It's not about you at all, and it's not about me. It's about your interview guest. You know, who you got? Who's your interview with? If I had an interview with Obama tonight, boy, that's going to elevate the perceived value of that interview. Man, Senoff got an interview with Obama? I mean, look at that. That would be just a huge win. So if you want to get to that point the fastest way possible, go after the biggest names, names that are very well known, you know, stars, people who would seem to be untouchables. If you could get an interview with someone who's perceived to be untouchable, that is going to be the fastest way. It's who your interview is with. It's not about you. But you land those untouchable interviews and your status will go right up along with them.
Is it possible to make money using videos to sell your own product or to hire salespeople to sell it for you?
Yeah, I don't do videos, but absolutely, I'm sure it's possible to use video to sell your product. It's done all the time. You can go on YouTube. There's plenty of videos that are designed to create interest and to sell a product. So absolutely, it's possible.
If I want to pitch anything by the end of the interview, should I rehearse the transition to the pitch beforehand or try to make it naturally?
I think you can do both. You can make it naturally. After I do my interviews and I do the editing, I may pre-record the pitch. So I may say, for more information on Michael Senoff's hidden marketing assets, go to www.hardtofindseminars.com/HMA_details.htm. And I may have a recording of that, and I may put that 10 minutes into the interview. I may put it 30 minutes in the interview, and I may have it already pre-recorded and put it at the very end of the interview. So you've got a pre-recorded pre-recorded version that's a little commercial that only lasts about 8 seconds, and that's in three spots of the interview. And then as you're doing the interview, you can sneak it in, you know, in normal conversation. Like I may say something about my HMA system and throw a link out there in the normal conversation. So you can do both, and you should do both. Your interview is like a piece of real estate. It's a valuable piece of real estate. Your interview is what the listener is listening to, and you need to fill it up with some of your own promotions and some of your own advertising before, during, and after.
How do you gain access to the people you want to interview?
You know, a lot of these questions about email marketing, many of my bigger name interviews have been because of my daily email. So let me give you an example. I told you a story about the interview with Drayton Byrd. Well, Drayton Byrd's big buddies with Ken McCarthy. And after I did the interview with him, he emailed Ken McCarthy, and Ken McCarthy emailed me and inquired about me interviewing him. And I jumped on that. So first of all, start with your communications with your daily emails. Do a good job with that. You'll get the interviews. Do a good job with your interviews. And you can work off referrals, or you can approach people through a simple email, or you can call them up. You just do it like you'd ask for anything else. You just ask for the interview.
How do you develop a list of prospects to market your audio interviews to?
My list of prospects are developed from my actual audio interviews. So I put out a good interview, and when someone goes to the page to listen to that interview, I have a pop-up that says, if you'd like to subscribe and be notified about when my new interviews come out, put your email address in there. So I give people a chance to subscribe on all the pages of my website. So once a day, if you go to one of my pages on my website, and you're going to see at least one pop-up per day that gives you a chance to enter your email address to get onto my list. That's how I get people onto my list.
What is the easiest site to post podcast audio on?
They're all fairly easy. I have an assistant who does all that for me. I think there is some confusing parts with the RSS feeds and stuff, but you can find someone who can do that for you. I think it just takes time and a little bit of know-how. I'd recommend going on to Elance or going on the Craigslist and saying, hey, I need someone who can help me post some podcasts. And if you don't want to do it, hire someone to do it and pay them per audio that they post for you and just get someone to help you with it. I actually technically don't know how to do it, but I think as far as simplicity, they're all about the same. You're just uploading, and you've got to do some code and stuff. You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
What is a good interview format?
The easiest and best interview format is the question and answer format, just like we're doing right now. Prepare your questions before the interview. You can collect the questions that may have been asked by previous people interviewing your same expert. You can go to Amazon and look at a table of contents about a book maybe this expert's written and look at the outline and turn the outline into questions. You can do your research and maybe read a newspaper article or go to Easy Articles and read some of the stuff that your expert has written about and take their headlines and take some of the topics they talk about in their articles into questions. The best way, which I've done with this question and answer section on email, is if you have a list, is to submit to your list and let them know you'll be interviewing this expert, and if you have a question for him, submit it to me. And so I collected a list of questions of what people wanted to know about email marketing, and that's what we're answering today. So we know that we're delivering the answers to exactly what my list wants to know, and there's no better format than that, giving your list exactly what they want to know. That's even better than trying to make up what you think they want to know, because you're asking them direct.
When I do an interview, I feel many times my questions lack flow. How do I format the call? What are the best kind of questions to ask, and what is the best way to close the call?
You format the call, you just be yourself. You know, you find your expert, you say, we're going to do an interview on this. Like I said, you want to prepare the questions. Your best questions are the questions that your market wants to know. You can either poll them and find out what they want to know or do the research on your own from previous people who have interviewed the expert or material and books and articles that this expert has put out there to credentialize himself. You get on the phone with the expert and you say, okay, here we go. I've got the questions. Are you ready to go? And you just do it. You ask them the question, you shut up, and you let them talk. And then you close the call by saying, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. And after I get the editing done, I'd be glad to send you a copy of this interview. Your interview guests, it's understood. They know why they're doing an interview with you. It's free publicity for them. It's promotion that they would not have otherwise. There's an understanding that this is how it goes down, and they've probably done it before. So it's not really a big deal, nothing to be scared about. You just do it.
How do I get experts to let me interview them for free?
You let them know what's going to be in it for them. You know, they're not going to charge you. It's like I said, it's free publicity for them. Some say any publicity is good publicity. If they know that you have an outlet to broadcast their interview, so if they know that I'm sending interviews out to my thousands of subscribers as part of the service that I provide, they know that if they let me interview them for free, that that interview is going to get in front of 10,000 people or more. And it's going to be listened to thousands of times and downloaded thousands of times. Why would anyone say no to that? Everyone's trying to get more exposure. And if they can invest 1 hour on the phone answering a few questions, which they're already an expert at, and you can tell them they can keep the interview and let them do what they want with it, it's just a risk-free deal for them. It's them at the top of their game selling their products and services and selling their credentials of themselves. It's just a good deal for them. It's good business. That's why they would do it. So you have to let them know that you're going to be able to get their interview in front of people. If you don't have a list, you can let them know your intentions. Your intentions are to build the world's largest site on cat juggling, for example, or whatever it is you're doing. And so your intentions are to do this if you don't. So you can explain what your wishes are. You may not have it now, but they may say yes just based on your plans and your intentions if you come off as reasonable and credible and enthusiastic.
You know what just occurred to me when you were talking about this? The best way to someone to create a product that you almost is guaranteed to sell to your list. You send out an email, you ask them who are their favorite people to learn from in that market. They send you that list back, you get interviews with all of them, and you package that into a product. And now you've just hit everybody's favorite hero in that market, and it sells it for you.
Yeah, good idea.
Speaking of that, what documents, if any, do you get the interviewee to sign so that you can even sell the interview on the CDs in the first place?
Well, you may find this surprising. You know, I worried about this 10 years ago, and I used to have an interview release form, and I had gotten a couple of my interview guests to sign it, but it became very hard to do. It's like a deal killer. It's kind of like bringing an attorney in on the deal, and it just kills the deal, and it never happens. And I just decided I'm not going to do a document. I get a oral agreement before the interview. I explain that, okay, I'm going to be recording the call. We're going to do this interview now. You understand that I'll be promoting it to my list. Remember, and that's understood. That's already an understood thing, but you can say it again. I'm going to be promoting this to my list. I may take the interview and I may package it and sell it with some of my products. Are you okay with that? And you get a yes, and it's never ever been a problem. Over 10 years, I've never had a problem with it. No one's ever said stop selling my interview or stop sending out my interview. There have been two or three occasions that that has occurred just because maybe it was old information or they're in a new business and they don't want it to be out there. And you just take it down. It's not a big deal, but it's never become a problem for me. But you can talk to your attorney and see what the best course of action is for you. I just haven't done it. I get it orally, and I have a master recording of that that I save on my hard drive if it ever became a problem. Hi, it's Michael Senoff, and if you like what you've been listening to in this 10-part series with Ben Settle on email, I want to introduce an incredibly advanced system on selling that can be used in your one-to-one phone call conversations, in all of your email correspondence, and or integrated into your written sales letters. Go to www.hardtofindseminars.com/HSSOE.htm. Or you could just go to Google and search these words, the highest paid salesman on earth, and you'll find a link to an incredible product that will only enhance all your selling efforts, whether it's one-to-one phone conversations, emails, or in your sales letters. Check it out at hardtofindseminars.com/HPSOE.htm. This is the end of part 5. Please continue to part 6.